There was one final test that Martland now conducted. I then took from Mrs. Mylifer, he remembered, portions of the femur and other bones and placed dental films over them. I strapped the films all over her bones at various places and left them in a dark room in a box. When he tried this experiment on normal bones, leaving the films in place for 3 or 4 months, he had not got the slightest photographic impression. Within 60 hours, Sarah's bones caused exposure on the film, white, fog-like patches against the ebony black. Just as the girl's glow had once done, as they walked home through the streets of Orange after work, her bones had made a picture, an eerie, shining light against the dark. And from that strange white fog, Martland now understood another critical concept. Sarah was dead, but her bones seemed very much alive, making impressions on photographic plates, carelessly emitting measurable radioactivity. It was all due, of course, to the radium. Sarah's own life may have been cut short, but the radium inside her had a half-life of 1,600 years. It would be shooting out its rays from Sarah's bones for centuries, long after she was gone. Even though it had killed her, it kept on bombarding her body, every day, every week, month after month, year after year. It is bombarding her body to this day. Martland paused in his work, thinking hard, thinking not just of Sarah, but of her sister Marguerite, and of all the other girls he had seen in Barry's office, thinking of the fact that, as he later said, there is nothing known to science that will eliminate, change, or neutralize these radium deposits. Radium is indestructible, Dr. Kniff concurred. You can subject it to fire for days, weeks, or months without it being affected in the least. He went on to make the damning connection. If this is the case, how can we expect to get it out of the human body? For years, the girls had been searching for a diagnosis, for someone to tell them what was wrong. Once they had that, they believed faithfully. Then the doctors would be able to cure them. But radium poisoning, Martland now knew, was utterly incurable. Following the results of his tests, Martland shared the proven cause of Sarah's death. There is not the slightest doubt, he wrote, that she died of an acute anemia following the ingestion of luminous paint. As hers was the first properly tested case, it became of considerable interest to medical men. Dr. Flynn, the company doctor, immediately wrote to Martland. Would it be possible for me to get a section of Mrs. Mylifer's tissues so I can compare them with those of my laboratory animals, which I am expecting to kill sometime in the next few weeks? Dr. Drinker, too, followed the progress of the case with great interest. He had not finished his fight with USRC because Arthur Roeder had not kept his word. It was the company lawyer, Josiah Stryker, who had handled the delicate matter of the Drinker report and the Department of Labour. He had taken the report to Roach, but refused to let him retain a copy. It will be available to you, he said airily to Roach, at any time in my office. Stryker had left with the report in hand. He added as he went, if the department insist on having a copy in their own file, I will provide one. Well, the department had insisted, but the company sent it to McBride, Roach's boss, the man who had been furious when tenacious Catherine Wiley had intervened in the dial painter's cases and rebuked Roach as a result, and not to Roach himself. When Drinker found out, He was furious. On the day Sarah Mylifer died, he wrote to Rhoda, "I am arranging for the immediate publication of my report." He was, as the saying goes, planning to publish and be damned. But Stryker was quick with his response. Publish and be sued. Yet if Rhoda and Stryker thought they had Drinker pegged, they had thought wrong. One of Drinker's brothers happened to be a good corporation lawyer. The doctor asked him what he thought of the firm's threat, and the brother said, to tell him to sue and be damned. So Drinker called their bluff.